Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, or whenever you happen to be listening to this. Welcome to the Film Realist Podcast, the film and TV podcast from a complete nobody. That is hopefully for somebody. My name is Kyle Naranya, and welcome to episode 185. And on this week's episode of the podcast, I will be reviewing the latest film starring Chris Pratt and Rebecca Ferguson, Mercy. What happens when the judge, jury, and executioner are just AI? Because, you know, artificial intelligence, it's a brand new thing and not an element of science fiction that we've probably been exploring for the last 46 years. No need to worry, though. If you didn't see the film, there will be a non-spoiler section as well as a spoiler section. Time codes will be listed in the description should you feel the need to hop around the episode, maybe once you've seen the movie. And then to round out the end of the episode, I will be responding to listener mail, the latest reviews on the podcast, and you can find out what I'm going to be talking about next week. Let's sit in our chair and talk to our AI.
What the?
Get me out of this chair!
Detective Raven, I'm Judge Maddox, and this is the Mercy Capital Court, a judicial system powered by artificial intelligence.
Before getting into the movie, I got a little rant, so apologies, listeners, if you really wanted to hear what I thought about Mercy. I find it incredibly interesting. This is an Amazon Studios film who now owns MGM, the famous lion, which also connects to Bond and all sorts of other things. And I've come to this realization that I wanted to share with the listeners who probably don't care, but I wanted to get this off my chest, which is forever, as long as we've had television and the theatrical-going experience, and with the dawn of cable and your basic network television, there was an era of made-for-TV films. And those were understood to be of a lower quality. Usually that was due to budgetary constraints, and sometimes the talent that would be in those films weren't stars that were going to be driving you to go to the theater. And the idea of the movie star is, it's something that's sort of gone away. We don't really have many of them, and there's conversations as to what drives people to go to the theater, and it's a constantly evolving cycle. The pandemic has clearly negatively affected that, and we've gone to expect things to be on streaming. And what's so funny with Amazon in particular is I looked at this movie a while back, I believe it was 2 years ago now, was Roadhouse. Directed by Doug Liman, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, it had Conor McGregor in it, and it was designed as a theatrical movie. And then ultimately it was, for no other way of describing this, it was dumped on streaming. And you can look into this. Doug Liman, the director, was livid with this circumstance because he made the movie to be theatrically released, to be seen on the big screen. And with streaming being so vital to the entertainment industry, and I would say for the most part, it's the majority of how people are watching their content, whether that be television and films. And more often than not, what we've seen specifically from somebody like Netflix and Prime Video is they have taken over the made-for-TV film space. Those used to exist. Disney Channel would have them, ABC, so many places would have them. But what's changed is you are getting known talent, insane budgets, more so than you would ever get theatrically now. But the quality maybe has not necessarily improved. You have directors, of course, who are making movies that would look incredible on the theater screen, despite the fact that you could then watch it on your phone. And also, of course, I'm reacting to the conversations that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck had around their movie, The Rip. I don't want to review that movie. I wouldn't have a ton of great things to say about it. But watching Mercy, which clearly the pitch is what got this movie made. And I get it. Artificial intelligence, AI, it is everywhere. You see it with Grammarly, with ChatGPT, with Gemini, Siri, which is now just going to be Gemini. The way that it's all used in our everyday lives, and there's this fear around it. But what's so funny about AI is artificial intelligence as a science fiction concept is something that's not necessarily new. Terminator had AI. Alien had AI. sentient beings. Star Wars had AI. Droids, while you could give them orders, were still sentient beings. C-3PO, R2-D2, machines with personality. The Matrix. Like, artificial intelligence isn't new, but this use of it in the film is clearly something that people thought would be a compelling movie. And don't get me wrong, Rebecca Ferguson as an AI, that sounds interesting to me. I'm a huge fan of hers. I think she's been great in so many different projects. Obviously, the Mission Impossibles, The Greatest Showman. She's in a lot of things that I quite enjoy. But unfortunately, with this movie, we're introduced with Chris Pratt. And if you have issues with Chris Pratt, you're not going to like this movie at all. But my main problem is the introduction to this character and the way that the narrative is set up for this world that is now relying on this, and not even the world, specifically California, that this artificial intelligence, Maddox, the Mercy Court, is designed to be the judge, the jury, and the executioner. Gone are the lawyers and the human judges and the juries, because those are humans and they cannot be truly objective. Those are really compelling things to think about. And I thought about those, but the movie doesn't. And that's really problematic, because you give us an AI, but the world is not established in a way in which you really feel for why this was necessary. You can exposition dump in the beginning, be like, things were bad, and here's the world now. But if we don't really care about who these things are happening to, that makes the overall journey of the experience kind of underwhelming. The Chris Pratt character of Chris Raven is not introduced as a nice guy. He's somebody with flaws, which is not necessarily a problem. John McClane had flaws, but as the everyman, you wanted to see him succeed because the struggles he was facing were really human problems. Him and Holly Gennaro, you know, they were separated by distance and through the lack of communication, which is mostly a John McClane problem. But the movie from the immediate get-go is like, this guy did this terrible thing and we want to feel bad for him. But all the evidence that is presented very early on, obviously the movie maybe wants you to think that he did it, but all the marketing to me is, well, it's Chris Pratt. As pop culture goes, and even though, and I was there with you in 2018, we all really hated that Star-Lord was the reason Thanos was able to snap half the universe from existence, that character's arc was sort of fit within that. The character of Chris Raven's not somebody that I would say I want to succeed. Of course, you don't want somebody to be killed wrongfully, to be convicted of a crime they didn't commit. That's a real problem with real courts. But any complicated exploration of the use of artificial intelligence in the criminal justice system is not really explored. Any meaningful conversations around it or its use are just sort of haphazardly delivered. And the shallowness to a film that, again, I'd love to have been in that pitch meeting being like, here's what this is. Here's what it could mean. Okay, great. The whole concept of what this movie looks like, it's fun and exciting to see all the different digital things flying by, but it's not captivating visually. There's a lot of opportunities for that to be much more interesting to look at, to see the web of the investigation and trying to prove your innocence. And Chris Raven being an LAPD detective, obviously he would be capable of those skills, building a case that would require you as a detective to get warrants or to have people convicted. And what does this AI system mean in this world going up against a human? The only real exploration of that is just sort of as the information is presented to us. And unfortunately, because 90% of the movie is Chris Pratt sitting in a chair, I mean, it helps with the budget of the movie. I'm assuming it was Chris Pratt and Rebecca Ferguson that were the main reason for the cost of the movie. $60 million in big blockbusters nowadays is not a ton, but it allows the opportunities for characters just to tell you things. You don't have eloquently woven together exposition to build his case. He has to tell you. And while you get to see his method of doing those things, how he builds a case, It's just exposition. So when you don't have good exposition, it makes the movie feel quite draining. And the overall mystery has to just be like, here it is. We can't really hide it from you. You're supposed to be experiencing it with Chris Raven. And it's not necessarily shocking. And the relationships don't get to be compelling because everything you see in this world is from all of the publicly accessible data, from videos, from emails, text messages, and phone calls. But we don't get to explore what that necessarily means, that in a police state like this, when you have an artificial intelligence that has access to everything, wouldn't that make the truth much more easy to access, as opposed to having anybody potentially be convicted for crimes they don't commit? And the whole point of this movie is he didn't do it. He is a police officer who was arresting people and sending them to mercy court. But any questions about the morality or what it means are haphazardly addressed or not addressed at all. And you wind up with this movie that's just sort of there. And the reason I brought up Roadhouse is that movie's set pieces are grand. You're in the Florida Keys. You have panoramic shots to really engage with that atmosphere of that specific place in Florida, in the Roadhouse. And I don't know why I'm just specifically thinking of Roadhouse, but in this movie's action set pieces, they're incredibly generic. It's supposed to be this slightly futuristic world, but it does feel very budget. The use of effects, I think, would have been handled so much more successfully in where you had this opportunity to make this ironically sort of similar to the War of the Worlds Prime Video movie, where it was done through found footage. But the way that they construct all of the visuals are kind of like what works for this scene, as opposed to sticking to one particular method for showing us the evidence of the case. It's kind of like everything is possible. And if that's the case, then the movie should look way better. I just sort of watched this. This may be a movie that I don't even know if it's called TBS or Peachtree anymore, or maybe Sunday Afternoon on HBO. It's a movie that I watched that at times was just kind of boring, and I struggled to really engage with it because it just sort of, it's a movie. It's not something that I was offended by, but I am a little disappointed because there is potential that could have made this so much better. There's more I can say in spoilers, so let's not waste any more time. Let's jump into full spoilers for Mercy. You have been warned.
Detective Raven, I know precisely who you are. You're before this court today charged with the murder of your wife.
Predictably, like so many other science fiction movies, we get an established exposition sequence to build out Los Angeles and why it's become this hellscape. And what's incredibly frustrating about watching something like this now is also the movie has no self-awareness, specifically in the United States. Of course, I live in Canada and am witnessing what is going on in the United States, and it absolutely terrifies me and makes me incredibly sad. But specifically in LA, the Mercy Court has now been established as this artificial intelligence judge, and you are brought forward as an individual and given an hour and a half to prove your innocence with an infinite access to all public information, whether that be emails, phone calls, Zooms, any public data that you may have access to. And I mentioned this in non-spoilers. I am absolutely shocked that there was no commentary on the justice system having infinite access to all of your personal information. It is able to go through, at least the way it's presented in the film, everything that is accessible, even if it may not necessarily be public, logging into people's phones. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but there was a case where there was an arrested suspect, and he had an iPhone, and I believe it was the FBI or the CIA wanted Apple to unlock it, and they said no, because if they gave whatever Justice Department access to that, if they built something to unlock the software, that it could also be used for nefarious purposes. You know, maybe we can talk about the justice system having infinite access to all of our information, public or private, because there are several instances where we just see inside people's homes with what's in their homes. Ring cameras, as well as phone cameras. The use of social media, I don't think, is necessarily a bad idea in that, yeah, if you're putting things out publicly, whether you have a private Instagram or not, Instagram still has access to that information. YouTube, TikTok, all those things. And we get to see some of that through Chris's daughter. And I mentioned this in non-spoilers, which is Chris has an understandable trauma he's dealing with, which is the death of his former partner. And this sort of spirals him down the addict when it comes to drinking alcohol. But he's had a year of sobriety, and then he also fell off the wagon again. And I don't necessarily have any issues with anybody having any addiction whatsoever. It's a real mental health issue, and people do struggle with that dilemma of staying sober. It's a real world thing that people experience. The problem is with the drinking, we never really get to see much of Chris as a successful partner to his wife. So yes, you don't want somebody to be convicted of a crime they don't commit. The problem is all of the information that's presented shows what a garbage human being Chris has been as a husband. Again, I understand the struggle he's supposed to be going through. The relationship he has with his daughter is clearly one where he is trying his best to be a loving father and promises her that he didn't kill his wife. Spoilers, he didn't do that. It turns out it was maybe the other most famous person in the movie outside of the two main cast, which is, you know, not necessarily shocking. If you ever watched TV murder mysteries, it's usually the bigger name or the guy that's introduced like this. Yep, spoilers. It's Chris Sullivan, who was Toby in This Is Us. Anyways, so that is something that I struggle with where, yeah, you want the actual culprit, the murderer, to be found, but I don't care about Chris Raven's relationship because he's somebody who isn't shown really in any positive light whatsoever. We understand why he was doing the things he was doing, but that doesn't necessarily redeem him as a character. The actual investigation is interesting to see how you would use all of this information, whether that be going through the emails, the phone records, and uncovering the mystery around what his wife was doing is interesting only because for no reason whatsoever, it circles back on what the very first Mercy court case was, which was Chris and his newer partner find somebody they believe murdered this girl in a homeless encampment, and he was found guilty and killed. It is revealed near the very end that it turns out that Rob Nelson, who was also Chris's sponsor, was also the brother of the guy who was wrongly convicted and killed. And it turned out that there was this missing evidence. If the movie much earlier on, when trying to build out the narrative of who Chris was, because within criminal justice, and I am not a lawyer, there was an opportunity to explore and explain the character of the convicted. You can use character witnesses. My client is not capable of these things. Here are some examples based on the witnesses that I've brought in to testify on his character. We don't really do that. We get brief moments of Rob Nelson, who's played by Chris Sullivan, who was his sponsor. And we bring up the David Webb case a couple of times. But then as we're exploring information near the last third, it turns out that this was a 2-year plan and that Rob Nelson was actually Rob Webb and his name was changed when he was adopted. And now he's abducted Chris Pratt's daughter, and he's going to blow up the court because it killed wrongly convicted my brother and he died. Wrongful convictions are wrong. Unfortunately, they happen a lot. But with a movie that is only 100 minutes long, so that's less than 2 hours, it's 1 hour and 40, you don't really have any time to explore any of these things at all meaningfully with any real substance. And that's disappointing because I see the bullet points for what this movie is, and I think to myself that they're quite interesting. But the delivery and the way that they're woven together isn't. It is very simplistic. Quite frankly, the humanizing of the AI seems kind of abrupt. We just have Chris Raven, also Chris Pratt, funny, Chris, just saying everything he's thinking out loud. Because he's the only person in the courtroom, he has nobody else to talk to outside of the AI. And we also don't at all look at the fact that Judge Maddox, the artificial intelligence model, played by Rebecca Ferguson, slowly is deteriorating, I'm tired, that the objectiveness of the information. It's the last 15 minutes where they work together through Chris finding out who the person was because of this lost product with his wife's work. We found out his wife was sleeping with someone else. And again, the morality of what the character's choices are just don't make them people you necessarily want to root for as well. Does Chris's wife deserve to be murdered? Of course not. But the movie stretches so far into what these people do off camera that the delivery of what they were doing on camera just doesn't make them people you like. And that's really hard to enjoy a movie when you don't like any of the main characters. Even Chris's partner, Jack, turns out she buried evidence so that way the first court case with Mercy would go with no problems. But what's so annoying about that is we don't explore any of the aftermath of what Mercy Court is if people can be found guilty when they are innocent. So there's so many ideas that wind up going nowhere because the movie doesn't have any time for it. And I mentioned the budget earlier. There was an entire car chase scene that's supposed to be sort of found footage-y. They have these drones that essentially humans can ride on top of, and that makes it cool to give you a bunch of different camera angles. But what would have helped the visual style of the movie is if we stuck more to that found footage model, I think it would have been substantially more immersive, where you can give us any possible camera angle. Sometimes an overabundance takes away any real meaning. So many filmmakers have talked about being put into a box ultimately made them more creative, and it wound up giving them a better product. Jaws was supposed to have Bruce, the animatronic shark, way more. He wasn't working, so they had to adjust. Star Wars, the budgets of certain things. Like, anytime a real struggle has affected a true master of the art form, you get something even better. For my DCAU fans, they wanted to show the Graysons falling and hitting the earth in Batman the Animated Series. They weren't allowed to do that. And the rope snapping sequence, just showing Bruce and the other circus members react, or circus guests reacting, incredible visual language. This movie has every opportunity to do, oh, look, it's a vertical video. It's a drone footage. We're doing a CGI 3D replication of the murder scene. It's too much. And ultimately, it's too much of not enough of anything interesting. The movie's sort of fine. It tries to give you a big action sequence and test the morality of the people once Chris is found innocent so he can take down Toby from This Is Us. It just sort of happens and it washes over you. And I think the worst thing about it is this could have been great, but ultimately it's really forgettable. It doesn't explore what it really means to be having your artificial intelligence be the justice system you're relying on. It's presented as one case, and we only really know of one other case. It says that it lowered crime, but yeah, if you're killing all of the alleged suspects, that would hopefully make people not want to commit crimes, but we don't explore any of this, what I would classify as dystopia, with any real meaning. It's a movie that came out in January, and I'm not necessarily shocked that it came out in January. I do feel maybe this will do really well on streaming, and it probably should have been one of those movies that Prime Video did put on streaming. That will do it for my spoiler review of Mercy. Now let's get into listener mail and question of the week responses.
Can I ask you a question?
Just one?
There's something I've been meaning to ask you.
I ask the questions, you answer the questions.
Why do you ask questions to which you already know the answers?
Did that count as a question?
Yes.
Damn it.
Last week's question of the week was, what is your favorite interpretation of AI in a movie or a show? Dylan Pollock writes in, favorite movie interpretation of AI? Kyle, it's obviously Disney Channel original movie, Smart House. I think that's... So, being a Canadian, I had Family Channel, and you had to pay a lot to actually get the Disney Channel. I don't know for a while if that was even possible. This is one of the Disney Channel original movies I never did see. So, Dylan, I'm glad that that's the case for you. Scotty Cameron says, figured since Kyle's a scaredy cat, Hostel isn't up his alley. I bet Wrong Turn is also something Kyle hasn't seen. You know what, Scotty? I don't think so. Let me look that up real quick. It's a series of films? Nope, definitely not. Scotty, you are correct. Anyways, enough said about talking about horror movies. All right, the obvious answer is Terminator, because it's all about AI and AI enslaving humanity. So I'll go with something relatively different. I'll go with The Entity in Mission Impossible. It's the closest thing to AI as it currently exists, thanks to Palantir and OpenAI in its nature. Aside from having a mind of its own, AI is not there yet. No, this is one of the most funny things about AI as a system, is it is only as good as the things that you put into it. It needs to base all of its procedures on human information. It is not generative of things of its own ideas. Even when it's making visuals based on stuff, they're based on stuff. Anyways. And then Legacy Odinson also says, Smart House, final answer. I think that's absolutely hilarious that, for one, we have two Smart House answers. But it's funny that in the last 5 years, with artificial intelligence becoming much more a part of the regular conversation, because everyone has incredibly powerful computers in their pockets, and all of these models have become used with everyday, Grammarly, ChatGPT, Gemini, OpenAI, all these things, that I don't really think it is representative of my favorite versions of it. Terminator's a good example. Scotty, I really didn't like The Entity in Mission Impossible. It was such a compelling idea, but I mean, I did reviews on Dead Reckoning and The Final Reckoning, so you can listen to those episodes for my thoughts on that. I think, having said it earlier, do the Star Wars droids count? Because, you know, C-3PO and R2-D2, those things are amazing, and I love those characters, and they're absolutely iconic. So I'm going to go with that. My question of the week for this week, which will be answered hopefully next week by you lovely podcast listeners, is, outside of Indiana Jones and Star Wars, what is your favorite Harrison Ford performance? I'm going to be reviewing the first episode of Shrinking Season 3. I absolutely adore this show, and I love how much TV I get to talk about in the early months in the year. So to answer that question, you can email the podcast, filmrealistpod@gmail.com, or you can comment on Spotify and YouTube. If you're not subscribed to the podcast on your preferred podcast platform, please do so. That way you always see the question of the week, because I always make sure to include it in the episode description. Speaking of reviewing the podcast, we have a new review on Apple Podcasts. This is from Traden. I didn't know this much. 5 stars. Someone recommended this podcast to me. I was initially hesitant because I am not a huge movie person. There was a lot of films I didn't even know came out, and I really enjoyed this podcast. Thank you so much for reviewing the show. It does help the podcast grow and wind up being heard by more people. We are crawling towards that 500 subscriber mark on YouTube. So if you are listening to this on YouTube, on the Multiverse of Color by chance, please click the subscribe button on YouTube. It would be amazing. It would give the podcast more opportunities in the future, which would give me more opportunities to share amazing things with you. I am lucky to say that this is not the only episode of the podcast this week. I did release a brief non-spoiler thoughts on Wonder Man. But given how I have seen all 10 episodes and didn't want to spoil anything, there will be another episode of the podcast this week where I will give all my thoughts on all the spoilery stuff in Wonder Man. I'm looking forward to the audience finally having the opportunity to see the show because I've been sitting on it for quite a while. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. My name is Kyle Naranya, and I will see you next time.